Okay, everybody, workday is over.
This is the best of the OG with Ovius and Giglio podcast, part of the Capital Broadcasting Podcast Network. Brought to you by Capital Financial Advisory Group. Get your total retirement income plan by texting JOE to 21000. Enjoy the best of today's show. Here's Ovius and Giglio.
Carolina Panthers general manager Scott Fritter are working in the lab, the GM lab. I hear finding market inefficiencies and taking advantage of it for the Panthers' benefit today. What life is this, Panthers fans? When's the last time you felt like the front office made some competent moves in the middle of the season?
It's a great scratch-off, too.
Yeah, it is.
A six-round pick. I know he was going to be released by the New England Patriots.
Yeah, real quick reset. So Stephon Gilmore, come to find out earlier this morning that I guess his usefulness was up after they threw the kitchen sink at Tom Brady on Sunday night.
You don't pay for past results if you're Bill Belichick. It's as simple as that.
So I don't think it's a coincidence that they decided to move on from a guy who's in the last year of his contract who has openly said he wants more money, and there was some back and forth during the mini camps about it. And you keep him on the roster up until you have your fateful meeting with Tom Brady and you utilize, you know, like all these things. And I know he's on the pup list and everything else, but yeah. Like you just did what you could do to see if you could have something for Tom Brady. I get all that stuff. But now it's up, moving on, clearing up some cap space. I think the Patriots only had like $54,000 left in cap space. This frees up, I think, close to $5.5 million in cap space for the New England Patriots, and they can go on and do whatever it is they need to do. Because he had so much owed to him, there were a lot of contenders in the NFL that did not have the cap space to add him. So, I guess in a last-ditch effort to generate some kind of market for Stephon Gilmore, they said there were reports this morning that the Patriots were getting ready to release him. Like, well, wait a minute. If he's going to be out in the free market, maybe we can make some sort of move. Obviously, that did not happen. Cap space is a big factor on that. Guess who has a lot of cap space?
The Carolina Panthers had the most cap space of any team in the NFL.
So that's exactly what they did. According to Jonathan Alexander of the Charlotte Observer, the Panthers started kicking around the idea of making a move yesterday once they got wind that the Patriots were ready to move on from Stephon Gilmore. And with no other better options out there, as you mentioned, it's a sixth-round pick in 2023. The Patriots already paid Gilmore $7 million of his contract. A roster bonus for Gilmore stays with New England. So the Panthers have 13 more weeks of pay, and it's at $5.44 million, all for a sixth-round pick in 2023.
And he's not healthy yet, and he can't come off the pup until week six or until after week six. But this is the definition of, if you're the Panthers, and we talked about their schedule, they could easily be 7-2, which is going to put them in a position to be in the playoffs. What a bonus that would be to add the 2019 NFL Defensive Player of the Year for the playoff push or the playoff drive. Are you kidding?
So
this is a great move by the Panthers.
If things stay on track, the Panthers' defensive backfield, when fully healthy, will consist of Stephon Gilmore, who will be available for Week 7 of the NFL season with the way the pup list rules work after the trade. He won't be able to practice with the Panthers until after week six. They'll play the Giants, I think, in week seven. J.C. Horn, who's dealing with a foot injury. J.C. Horn's the reason why they made a move for C.J. Henderson.
Yeah, he's out for the year. So,
but when everything is all said and done, so if they keep Gilmore, they'll have J.C. Horn, Dante Jackson, who I know is a priority for them, and they just made a move for C.J. Henderson.
Well, Chin, too, don't forget.
And Jeremy Chin,
the star of their draft class last year.
So that's a pretty stout situation for the Carolina Panthers.
And remember where Scott Fritterer came from, Seattle. And the backbone of Seattle's Super Bowl teams were their secondary. And this is another way where you can see Matt Rhule, we've talked about, had a way at Temple and Baylor of turning woebegone programs around and winning. But in the NFL, you need someone else who can help you navigate some of the waters there. And I think you mentioned market inefficiency, and I think this is something that the Panthers really, this is a scratch-off ticket, right? Like, if he doesn't come back and can't play, or if he leaves next year before signing a contract, that's fine. It's a six-round pick. No big deal. But again, that's what I'm saying. If you're 7-2 and you're sitting here hitting the second half of your season and you can get one of the best cover players in the entire league and add him to your roster, particularly when, by the way, you're going to see Tom Brady twice in the back half of your schedule, that's a win.
After Dallas, in the loss, we had talked about how the Panthers look to be ahead of schedule. Clearly, the front office and the coaching staff views it the same way, but even more. Like, I was of the opinion, hey, you know what? The Panthers can flirt with making the playoffs. Clearly, the Panthers front office and the coaching staff views it differently, that they actually can make the playoffs. You talked about their schedule. Got it. But you can also look at their division as well.
And that's... if the NFC West teams cannibalize each other, which they're almost certainly going to do,
yes,
then only one of them can be the wild. One of them will end up being the wild card, which leaves that second wild card spot open.
And look at the division itself. Atlanta's not good. New Orleans is in a weird kind of spot.
They're an every other week team.
We really don't know what
they're an AB team.
They really are. We don't. It kind of is up to Jameis in a certain sort of way how they're going to go. And I'll take it a step further. If I'm Matt Rhule, if I'm Scott Fritterer, if I'm David Tepper, the owner of the Carolina Panthers, I'm looking at Tom Brady on Sunday night. I understand that the Patriots threw everything at Tom Brady and they know how to go at Tom Brady because, as Bill Belichick said, we saw him every day in practice for 20 years. Got it. And I told myself I was never going to do this. After a couple years ago.
Well, you did it last year too. It's okay.
No, I didn't.
Yes, you did.
When it came to Tom Brady?
Yes, you did.
Did I say that
at the beginning of the year?
Yeah, maybe I did. I said I was never going to do it again. At some point, Tom Brady's going to look every bit his age. Like, for real, for real.
I'll be interested. Now, we're sitting here talking about the wild card spot.
I'm talking about the division.
No, that's what I'm saying. That's your point. And that's, I'm going to build off of that point. What if Brady goes on a hiatus? Right?
Yeah.
Not a bad one. Just like he realized... the year he was suspended, that was like the best thing that happened to him. If you're the Bucks, and let's just say you're 10-3, mm-hmm. Do you play Tom Brady for 4 weeks? Or do you give him? I mean, we've talked about this before too.
What's he supposed to do? Go down to Miami and hang out with LeBron James?
We're gonna have weeks. Normally, we have a week 17 in the NFL where no one plays.
Yes,
we're now. I believe this year we're gonna have 2 weeks where no one plays. Right. 17 and 18. So it's at least plausible if you're Bruce Arians and you're looking at Tom Brady, and you're not going to get 16 games out of Tom Brady anymore. You shouldn't want it. You should just want him to be healthy in the playoffs and be ready and firing. The second half of last year is really when he took off.
He needs to be on load management.
That's what I'm saying. They might go that route. Maybe, and if you're the Panthers and you're sitting here now, like I'm saying, those first 9 games, they could very easily be 7-2 after the 9 games.
At some point, it's going to fall off for Tom Brady. I'm just saying. I think there's an ebb and flow
within each of his seasons.
There is.
And guess what? I'm mad at myself for not realizing, you know what, a big part of him leaving New England. Yes, after 20 years, you do get tired of somebody. But he left New England because he was tired of playing in the snow and the rain and the cold and all this other stuff.
We saw it on Sunday night.
Right?
We saw it on Sunday night.
The extended careers of Peyton Manning and Drew Brees were not by accident. They spent a lot of time inside. So if you can't go inside, well, guess what Tampa's going to do for you? At least get you out of 4 of those games a year.
One fun note about the Stephon Gilmore trade for the Carolina Panthers. He's from South Carolina.
Yes, Rock Hill.
And, you know, there's the whole coming home thing and everything else. And Ian Rappaport of the NFL Network tweeted this out after the deal at around 1:15 this afternoon. New Carolina Panthers cornerback Stephon Gilmore has a house a few doors down from general manager Scott Fritterer. They can go over team strategy while eating vinegar-laden barbecue.
In South Carolina? Ian, that's... even I know Ian.
He stepped into barbecue Twitter. You never want... There are a couple of landmines in social media that you do not
yes.
landmine like you don't want to step across those fields.
No, wait a second. Is the house in South Carolina or outside of Charlotte?
I think it's outside of Charlotte.
North Carolina.
I think it's in
that
North
Carolina. That would definitely be Lexington territory.
But then we're getting into Lexington territory, which is my point. Ian Rappaport stepped into the minefield of barbecue. And now people
He could have just said barbecue.
He didn't have to say which one. Don't say which one. Because what's going to be
never qualified.
You're going to get, well, actually, Ian, that's more mustard base, is it not? Well, if it's in the western part of North Carolina, that's Lexington. Yeah, but Lexington's trash. Vinegar base is the best. Oh, I'm sorry. Texas barbecue man has entered the chat. Dude, you don't want those mentions. Never say barbecue in the men. Never do it.
Is there a type of barbecue you don't like? Because I like them all. Am I allowed to like them all, or do I have to like pick a team?
I mean, clearly, one picture of you would indicate that you do like them all. Just saying. But the answer to that is yes. You set yourself up for that one. You set yourself up for that one.
I mean, yeah, but you would say the same thing.
No, you said, come on, you set yourself up for that one. Come on. However,
he's lost like 20 pounds.
For.
And we lost him.
For a guy who shot 37 on the front nine today.
Back nine.
Or the back nine today.
I only played nine.
But for somebody who shot 39 today, you should appreciate. You're 37. You should appreciate having something put on a tee.
Absolutely.
I'm just saying.
Absolutely.
You put that on a tee. I'm going to take that. We now go to the Heister Automotive Group hotline and say hello to Wes Durham, ACC Network. Is Clifford standing by?
No, Clifford's in the Ville. I'm in Charlotte.
Okay, you're in Charlotte. All right, gotcha.
I just sent the picture. Rand asked how Clifford was doing, so I texted you both a picture of Clifford.
Clifford just chilling, man.
Hanging out in the closet, dog. I'm not there. He jumps up on the racks in the closet. It's crazy.
Yeah.
Vicky says he's got a mind of his own.
We've got 6-month-old kittens right now in the house, Lila and Pearl.
Yeah, boy.
Roy, RIP, the ACC picking kitten, he loved a Christmas tree, right? Mm-hmm. That was his den. When he was dealing with the tumors, we actually got him his own Christmas tree. I don't know if these two cats are going to be cool with a Christmas tree. They're going to wreck the place.
Yeah, don't do it.
How's Clifford with a Christmas tree?
It's in danger.
Oh, really? Clifford's not about that chilling under a tree life?
No. He maybe a little bit, but he wants to make sure that he can climb up in it first.
Okay.
Last year, Vicky decorated the entire tree.
Yeah.
And she went into the other room for, I don't know, 30 minutes and came back, and he was halfway up hanging on one of the branches.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, 12-pound cat hanging in the middle of a Christmas tree.
Wait a minute, Clifford's 12 pounds?
Oh, yeah.
That's a stocky dude.
Dude gets hate.
Seriously, in
man
pictures.
Man lives on the land. He's got the land as his oyster.
Hey,
now.
Man,
I mean,
he wears it well. I would not have guessed your cat
was
12
farm.
Pounds.
Look at the farm. He can, I mean,
that's
bring prizes
point.
Back, everything. It's good.
It's a good point. Yeah. That's a good point. Wes Durham of the ACC Network joining us here on the OG. All right, before we talk about ACC matters this week,
okay,
I am curious your thoughts on the Carolina Panthers and the rest of the NFC South, because the Tampa Bay Buccaneers are obviously in it to win it with Tom Brady.
Sure.
And I don't know how much of
at
what
the
we
cost of sacrificing maybe the next 3 to 5 years behind them.
Amen.
Yes.
Amen. Yeah. They already got one Super Bowl out of it. So.
Right. They're trying to get two, and I don't blame them.
I don't blame them.
Yeah, I don't blame them at all. But I will say this: if it doesn't go well, It'll bite you on the back end.
They do got to pay for it on the back end. The yep. New Orleans Saints kind of dealing with that a little bit post
right
Drew yep. Brees, and they kind of go as Jameis goes, and mm-hmm. the as Gilio kind of joked, they're a Sunday to Sunday team right now. We don't know what we're gonna get with
I
the Saints.
Don't disagree with that.
Your Atlanta Falcons not off to a great start, and then you've got the Carolina Panthers at a surprising 3-1. So the Panthers make a move today.
Yep.
Almost a Patriots. They got the Patriots in a Patriots-like way, a market inefficiency.
Right.
They didn't. You know, they had the cap space. They're only going to owe Stephon Gilmore just about $5.5 million for the rest of the season when it comes off the PUP list. He'll be available for Week 7 of the NFL. They've got some injuries in the defensive backfield, mm-hmm. and I feel it's like they clearly know they're ahead of schedule. But I guess maybe they see an opportunity in the NFC South. Do you see an opportunity there for them?
I see an opportunity as a wild card for sure.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that I see an opportunity for them to win the division because I think Tampa's going to win the division. But I would say I think Carolina is showing at least through the first quarter, what used to be the first quarter, now it's the first whatever fraction of the 17th
quarter, a quarter and a quarter.
Yeah. They are showing as much of success really on both sides, and that's with McCaffrey, you know, injured and some of the other things happening. I'd say this. I think New Orleans is New Orleans is clearly in transition. Atlanta's in a transition of a different way because Atlanta, like when Stephon Gilmore or Jalen Smith or something like that becomes available, Atlanta doesn't have the money to go get anybody.
Yeah.
So the Falcons are just, you know, like Dustin Colquitt at 39 years of age now is the punter. Because why? Well, because he's affordable and he's willing to come do it at the minimum, right? So you can add him when Cameron Nisolak pulls a hamstring. So that shows you, and Mike Pennell has come in to play in the defensive line now that Isaiah Oliver's out for the year with a torn ACL. Atlanta's problems are continuing to be amplified by injury.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and these are sequence injuries, like A.J. Terrell misses a game with concussion. Oliver tears up a knee. He's done for the year. Eric Harris has got a calf, may not play in London on Sunday. So I would say this, the Gilmore trade, if I were a Panthers fan, and Brownlow certainly speaks for all Panther fans.
Of course he does.
I would say I'd be very encouraged by them going out and making the move today in exchange for a six. Is that right?
Yeah.
2023 sixth round pick, yeah.
Oh, I mean, that's – if Stephon Gilmore comes back and is half to two-thirds of the player he was, that's well-spent money. That's well-spent draft pick because he's as good when healthy as anybody, you know, and even if he's 66% of his health, he's still – better than what you might see normally. So, yeah, I would say this. I think the Panthers are in it. I would say that the change of address has done Sam Darnold a world of good.
Mm-hmm.
I think the reuniting – I think Robbie Anderson's happy. I think that it looks like DJ Moore's off to a good start. I mean, yeah, and you traded Dan Arnold. Now, some people may not be crazy for that, but there again, I thought you got value on the back of it. So, you know, you're making a little bit of room – in a place where if you just kind of stay to week, and I know I sound like a coach here, I think you're going to have a chance to be in the wild card conversation. But you can't get ahead of yourself on the season. That's the number one thing you can't do if you're Carolina.
West Durham ACC Network joining us here on the Heister Automotive Group Hotline. I'm Joe Giglio. That's Joe Ovius. And Wes,
mm-hmm.
Now that we have your very lucid and solid and math-based Panther
Stop.
Takes.
Stop. There's nothing math-based about
it. No, there was like 66%. We had quarters. There was a lot of math involved in that little
– I just think Gilmore's
pretty
good.
No, I'm with you. I thought it was a great move. Just a total scratch-off move and what's really – what are you really paying? But here's where I'm more interested in some of your thoughts.
Okay.
Who is the best team in the ACC in football?
Today?
Yeah.
Right now.
Right now.
Wake Forest.
So you are on the Wake side, not the Pitt side.
No, I'm Pitt is second to me.
Okay.
Only because they took the El Dorado against Western Michigan,
sure.
Whose only loss is in Ann Arbor.
Right.
Don't forget that part
right.
of it. Right. And the loss was by 3 points. But if Pitt and Wake were both undefeated, it would be Pittsburgh. But right now, I'm going to go by the accounting we cut loose yesterday. I got Wake 1, Pitt 2, State 3.
Sounds about right.
I feel like Pitt has done a little bit more.
I don't disagree
Wake is 3-0
in
the league.
But Wake's undefeated.
Yeah, right.
Wake, Florida State 3 scores, and then I know you guys just had Clawson on. They found a way to win a game where they made some mistakes,
yeah. mm-hmm.
the rare Wake mistakes
yeah.
that typically would cost them, they found a way to win.
Mm-hmm. And Louisville's a more talented team. I think you could say that.
Louisville's a more talented team?
Yeah.
Than Wake Forest?
I think so.
Yeah, probably. But they're not as well.
I mean, that's the thing.
I love
Sat,
but Wake's not making – Wake doesn't make the mistakes.
There you go.
Louisville. Yeah. Wake doesn't make the mistakes Louisville does.
That's the thing. Louisville's in a tricky situation. It's like, I'm with Giglio. They got talent. Mm-hmm. The question is, Scott Satterfield even want to be there?
Right.
But and that's led to some
issues. I think
issues.
They'll pop somebody, though. I think Louisville will pop somebody.
Maybe. Because that's been the issue for Satterfield at Louisville is that I don't think he wants to be there.
But
his name shows up too much.
Right.
Because he wants his name to show up.
Yeah,
that's why. I mean, come on now.
And I'm gonna hope he's learned his. I'm gonna hope he's learned his lesson.
Is the job somewhere around the Carolinas? Then yes, suddenly the guy's interested in the job, and I understand why.
Yeah, but there was no reason to. I mean, I don't know why in the world, and this is totally off the grid from what we're talking about. I have no idea why you would want your name involved in the South Carolina job because you've got a better job.
No, I agree with you on that one. And that's the thing about getting back to who's the best team in the ACC. It's the thing that Giglio and I talked about yesterday. In a year of unpredictability, mm-hmm. I'm going to go with the team that tends to not make mistakes more often than not. And that's always been the calling card for Dave Clawson and Wake Forest. The trick for Dave Clawson and Wake Forest going forward, though, is at some point, talent does catch up to you. Depth does catch up to you. It's the thing that bothers Duke. It's the thing that's bothered Wake Forest and their Clawson in the last couple of years, where they have a tendency to fade, whether it's through injuries or they just don't have the depth.
Or so, November.
Yes.
Look at the schedule.
Their schedule later this year is more difficult. But this is why I think it's different.
Okay.
We have the weirdness of last year. They they have super seniors and things like that now. They've they actually have more experience now, and I think that is actually going to help Wake Forest compared to previous years.
I don't disagree. I think that I think Dino Babers said it best. We ran the cut this morning. Dave Clawson has got a veteran-laden team of multi-level experience guys.
Yes.
I mean, Luke Masterson. I mean, it's not John Patrician at Pittsburgh who's been there 7 years, but or not. He started at Penn State, now at Pitt, and it's 7 years total. And there, I think NC State's got a 7-year guy too, don't they, Gilio?
Riley. Yeah,
that's it. And so, you know, you got those type players, but Wake Forest has got them across the board, and good for Dave. But I also think this too. I think the teams that found the way to play and be productive last year in that environment, for the most part, are finding success this year. And they, you know, they were the ones that it looked pretty dim at times for them to play, and yet they found a way to get productive with it. I think that, I think they're very, very talented. I think they've got a chance. You know, somebody joked around with me last night, how are you going to market Pitt, Wake Forest, and Charlotte? I said, well, it'd be a hell of a game is what it's going to be. But if it happens that way, but we still got a long way to go. We're just getting to the halfway point of what the season looks like.
And so many different teams have played so many different games in the conference, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I think that's – like, Carolina's halfway through their schedule. Meanwhile – their conference schedule. Meanwhile, State's only played one conference game.
That's so, it. So is Pittsburgh, yeah. Pittsburgh is only one in.
One in for them as well. So it's tough to sit here and say, well, what's going to happen over the course of seven games, and particularly when, in my opinion, six of those for NC State will be basically coin toss games.
And I think the other thing, too, is we probably better saddle up for close games.
Yeah.
Five of the seven last weekend were touchdown or less.
And wackiness, because we've already seen Carolina lose to Georgia Tech. Georgia Tech turn around and get stomped by Pitt. I mean, don't be surprised if Georgia Tech turns around and beats Duke. Like, who the heck knows? You know, like, I just think we're going to see a lot of that this year.
And don't be surprised if we have more, you know, as long as we don't have any more dancing neutral zone no calls, we'll be okay. Or double holding on Florida State that allows Jordan Travis to go 37.
It's funny you bring up officiating, because we have hit the portion of the year where everybody's mad at ACC officiating. And I understand, like, the Louisville-Wake Forest game wasn't a stellar performance for the ACC. But we talked about this with Michael Felder, Stadium, the Tape Don't Lie podcast yesterday, and he's
signed up for the newsletter, by the way.
Oh, no, Felder's the best, man.
He did a really good job with that, actually.
Yeah, Felder's great.
Yep.
But Felder makes a really good point. It's like, yeah, you think your officiating's bad? Well, go talk to Pac-12 fans. Go talk to SEC fans. Go talk to Big Ten fans. Everybody doesn't like officiating, straight up.
Well, I said this on the show the other day, and I see it on Saturdays and Sundays, right? I mean, look, in the Washington-Atlanta game the other day, they dropped three flags, huddled, picked up three flags.
I mean, look, we saw something in the Dallas-Carolina game on Sunday where suddenly there was they blew the whistle on forward progress and they negated a fumble, and you can't even review that. The ball popped out on contact, and they called that forward progress, and they couldn't review it.
Right.
I mean, there are some weird things that happen every game.
But here's the part, and, you know, you guys watch as many games as I do, right?
I mean, I don't know about that, but yeah, well, go ahead. I'm flattered you think that, Wes, but yes, go ahead.
But here's the thing. I know guys. I mean, you know, Gilio, we get to know some of these basketball guys, right? I mean, and they like having the technological backup, but they don't blow the whistle and then go, okay, well, let's go over here and look and see if we got it right.
Mm-hmm.
I'm worried that in football, the game is moving so fast and there's so many little 50-50 plays, if you will, that we're blowing the whistle or we're not going to blow the whistle, and then we hope we can fix it with technology. That's the part that really concerns me. Are we fundamentally – and I'm not citing the ACC here. I'm citing football, period. Are we fundamentally getting away from – the human element to blow the whistle and see something and then call it, or are we just blowing the whistle, hey, I'm going to go ahead and call him down, and then if he's not, we'll go review it. That's the part I'm really concerned about, because the stuff that happened like last week in the Washington-Atlanta game, McLaurin caught the ball, turned, took a step and a half, fumbled the ball. They called it incomplete. They called it incomplete. They reviewed it. They called it a fumble on the field, and it was, or they ruled it incomplete on the field. He clearly took a step and a half and then fumbled the ball, and they went to the tape and then said, well, ruling on the field is confirmed. I mean, what are we doing? I mean, are we losing the sight of the human element in officiating by having the technology? And the technology, guys, is brilliant. But is it stalling the game? That's kind of where I am with really the college and the pro game when it comes to this stuff.
West Durham ACC Network brought to you by J.E. Womble and Sons. If they don't have it.
Man, look at me. LeBar and me got sponsors.
You don't need it.
Y'all big time.
We're running out of time here, Wes, and I don't want to get into a whole referendum on Clemson, but we have talked previously about how, yes, I feel like people have Clemson fatigue.
Right.
Can you figure out how they won this week and beat a pretty good Boston College team and then fell out of the top 25?
Oh, because people are just moving on.
But yeah, people are done with Clemson.
If you wanted to drop them out, drop them out after the state loss. Why after beating a pretty good Boston College team, do you drop them out of the top 25?
I think
if
I had to hazard a guess, like, what do you like to talk about? Breathe fire?
Yeah.
Breathe fire after something. I mean, that was a pretty that's an embarrassing loss for Clemson in the grand scheme of things, right? And given the way that people view them,
right,
and the way that they know that Dabo has gotten the better of Dave Dorn, et cetera. You come out after your first loss, you expect a championship-caliber team to breathe some fire, come out there hot, and do that against Boston College. I mean, I think that's a discredit to Boston College, which is a pretty good team. Jeff Hafley is not going to be the coach at Boston College for very long at the rate things are going. Yeah. But
ooh, is he good?
He's good. He's good, man. Yeah. I am impressed with that dude, and I hope they got the money to keep that guy around. Regardless, I can see why people have moved on with Clemson.
Did Dabo stumble upon something, though, in that game, Wes, at running back?
Well, he should have.
Yeah.
I mean,
I thought Kobe Pace had a little bit of pace to him.
Kobe Pace? How about Phil Maffa? How about Phil Maffa doing his best Raymond Priester incarnation?
Right, right.
I mean, big shoulder pads, gets in the hole, spins the whole bit. I mean, he's Raymond Priester 2.0.
Well, that's the thing. Like, all of those recruiting rankings couldn't have been fraudulent. Like, there has to be talent on that roster.
No, and look, I'm of the belief now that DJ Uiagalelei's got the first tee thing going. You know, he's standing every time he drops back to pass, he's you and me standing on the first tee going, man, I really want to hit the fairway.
Yes.
I really want to hit I don't want to play this ball out of the left rough.
I know
right
that feeling.
Yeah, I saw that swing the other day. I saw that swing. Thank God you didn't wear the Bojangles socks or whatever.
Oh, come on. Oh, yes. That was one of my greatest moments at Pinehurst number 2.
Yeah,
wearing
Donald
knee-high.
Ross rolled over in his grave.
What are you talking about? I'm wearing like North Carolina's finest. That North Carolina's finest golf course.
I was gonna say, as much time as Donald Ross spent in the state of North Carolina, there's no way he didn't enjoy a quarter white combo.
Come on. That was a tribute to all things great about North Carolina.
There's no way you didn't have a quarter white combo of chicken, egg, and cheese in the morning and hot donuts now at some point, right? And wash it down with a cheer wine.
I was going to say, get him a cheer wine.
At some point, Donald Ross is 2 a.m. going, damn, I'm hungry. Where's the cookout?
You know that Donald was Donald Ross is looking for a quesadilla tray.
Hell yes.
I think he dreamt up those turtleback greens, man.
That's exactly. Well, that and he got the onion rings. Yeah, so
there you go.
Oh, man.
I just yeah, we played at the SAS Championship, the media event on Monday.
Yeah, it's a good golf course.
Yeah, it's a great golf course.
TPC Wakefield, right?
No, it was at the Prestonwood Country Club.
Ooh,
and
Prestonwood.
It's a lot of fun, and Jillio got to experience golf with me for the first time in my terrible swing.
What do you think, Jillio?
Honestly, he had 4 good drives in a row at one point.
I only have so many swings in me.
No, he did.
Only so many swings.
Did you tap out after 12 or 13?
Oh, he wanted to.
He wanted to. No, Jillio saw the moment in which I'm mentally done with golf.
All right, let's go.
Let's wrap this up.
So now, but that was kind of a leadership problem on my behalf. Mm-hmm. Early in the round, there were a couple times we could have just Rand or Scott Wood could have just had the par or the
Wood play with you guys.
Yeah, Scott and Digital.
Scott and Digital.
Oh, Scott and Digital.
So we could have expedited some
NC
holes.
State, Marion, Indiana, Scott
from Digital. Scott
we could
Digital.
Have expedited some of those early holes, Wes, and I could have saved some of Ovius, but no, it worked out. Rand was the MVP of the team, just in case you were wondering.
I'm sure. Rand probably a little nervous. America's team in Milwaukee for the.
No, Rand was fine because he didn't have to hit a drive all day.
We used one drive.
There was one that he goes.
Need you here, bud. No, yeah. I just corked one.
I do have to say that Butch Harmon would have a tremendous time trying to get Ovius's swing.
I learned something new with all the golf pros in my mentions telling me I have a terrible golf swing. I was like, really? I didn't know I had a terrible golf swing. I learned the term reverse pivot. And how that is a golf swing poison.
You need to get the other Durham is the one who can help you with your golf swing.
Joe. Taylor?
Taylor's the one. Taylor knows how to teach
you. Right,
Taylor
hit him
can get you fixed.
But that would require me to care.
Now, see, Wes, he hit a couple of good shots. And I think it was like the 11th hole, and he hit a pretty good shot, and he goes, see, the thing is, after I hit one like that, I know exactly
what happened. This is the last thing I would say about golf.
Like it.
This is the last thing I was thinking about golf, and I think this is the most relatable thing I could ever say about golf.
Okay.
It was actually on the 8th hole, and we were 100 yards out.
Let's go to the 8th.
All right, let's go to the 8th here. What is Ovius doing? Oh, he's pitching out. He's pulling out one of his four clubs that he uses.
Oh, God.
It's not the 3-wood. It's not the 5-wood.
He hit a 3-wood out
Uncle
of trap,
Ned's 11-wood.
I used the 5-wood out of – actually, used I used
Uncle
the 9-wood.
Uncle Ned's 11-wood from the garage.
I used the Adams Tight Lies out of a trap. That's the 9-wood. So he's actually pulling out the pitch. I had what I would describe as a pure swing with hitting the ball that felt great. The golf ball did exactly what it was supposed to do. It landed on the green, left a divot, rolled back. I was in prime position for a putt. And that's when I turned to Gillio and I said, there it is. There's the one. The one golf swing I will have of this afternoon that makes me go, you know, if I just stuck with this, if I actually did some lessons, maybe I could be okay at it. But I know better because I see all of you dopes still chasing
Excuse
the
me?
Dragon when it comes
Excuse
to golf.
Me? Excuse me?
Yes.
We're not chasing the dragon.
Yeah, you are.
No, we're not.
You're out here chasing this purity with golf. Man,
yeah,
I'm going to break
Ovius
it. I'm
also
break
got
it.
The Gillio experience, Wes. So yeah, it was a little bit of an eye-opener.
Yeah, there was that.
Did you break
too.
A club?
No, I actually played yelling. Pretty well. There was some yelling, though.
There was some yelling.
There was some yelling.
I threw a club, actually. There was one point where I threw a
How
club.
How in the world can you throw a club? You've got the credentials of Bubbles the Clown when it comes to golf. How do you throw a club?
Because we're all human,
Your expectation
Wes.
Level is that of
no,
the dumpster.
No, you got to, Wes, you know me, you've known me long enough now to know that I am sneaky competitive.
Oh, the competitive gene and the...
You know I'm sneaky competitive.
But how can you be competitive about something you don't do?
Because I knew that if I could get this one putt and it probably would have helped things out. And that's when I get sneaky competitive. You know this about me. I'm like the law of the wolf. When you expect the least out of me, that's when I'm like, oh, really? All right, I'm going to show you.
Hey, Gillio, right, I got an idea for the holiday present for Ovius.
Oh, geez. Get me the 13 wood.
Medicus.
Oh, God. All right, Wes, we got to go.
Yeah, no kidding.
Later,
we had to go 5 minutes ago.
I know,
and
I know.
And then Jim Nantz interrupted the show.
We're out of here. Bye, Wes.
Take care. See you.
Wake Forest football coach Dave Clawson, who joins us on the Heiser Automotive Group Hotline. Coach Clawson, how are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
Thanks for joining us. You guys are undefeated in ACC play, and the conference appears to be wide open. And I know that at Wake Forest you have done what you've done throughout your entire career, and that is build a program through consistency. How do you feel the consistency of what you're running has kind of played into what has been a rather chaotic ACC season?
Yeah, I think it's too early to tell. As the season goes on, there's teams that get better. There's teams that have injuries and maybe fall off. And, you know, I think at the end of the year, you look back and I think there'll be some really good teams out of this conference. And I think some teams are playing really well right now. So, you know, it's you don't get ahead of it. And I think there's some very tough games ahead for everybody in the league. And I just think there's a lot of parity. There's a lot of good teams this year.
Dave Clawson, coach of the 19th-ranked Wake Forest Demon Deacons, joining us here on the Heister Automotive Group Hotline. Deacs take on Syracuse on Saturday, 3:30. They are 5-0 on the season. And Dave, you strike me as a process guy, not as someone who gets caught up in other teams. But the reality is the Atlantic side is up for grabs for, like, really the first time in a decade. Do you have to stress that opportunity to your players, or is that more of understood at this point, given the way that you guys have started the season?
I mean, we really honestly don't talk about it at all. We talk about the next game, the next opponent, because if you don't take care of your own business, what's going on throughout the rest of the league really won't matter. You know, some of those teams, we don't play them for a while. And right now we play Syracuse, who's in our division. And this is a team that, you know, 2 years ago we went up there and we thought we had a pretty good team, and they beat us. And it's a tough place to play. Syracuse has had a lot of good wins in the Dome. And again, we never, ever show the league standings to our team. Only thing that we show our team are turnover margins. That's how we list the league standings here, by who's doing the things to control their destiny. And there's not one thing here that has anybody else's win-loss record on it.
Dave Clawson, Wake Forest football coach, joining us here on the OG. And, Dave, when you have a veteran quarterback and one that's had kind of a unique even 4-year set like Sam Hartman has had, obviously you've seen him as a freshman and now as a fourth-year player. I'm curious, what growth has he shown to you as someone who demands a lot of out of that position?
Well, there's, number one, the physical growth. You know, when we recruited him, I think he was 158 pounds. And then when he came here, he was like 174, 175. Now he's 215 pounds. So he's certainly matured physically. He's stronger. He's faster. And, you know, all those things kind of happen between years one and two. What's really happened between years three and four is just his maturity, his resilience, his ability to bounce back from a bad play or a bad series. You know, Sam's a guy that takes football very seriously and puts a lot of pressure on himself. And that's part of the reason that he's such a high achiever. But sometimes when you put that much pressure on yourself and things don't go well, it's hard to recover from it. And where I'm really impressed with him this year is his ability to bounce back. And the Louisville game was a great example of that. I mean, he threw a pick in the fourth quarter that was probably his worst pick of the year, and he's only thrown two of them. And the second the play was over, I looked at him like, he's fine. He knew it, and he was ready to move on from it. And that was not something I don't think a year ago he would have done as easily. And the next two times out there, he led us right down the field, once for a touchdown and once for the game-winning field goal. So that, to me, is his you know, evolution as a quarterback mentally and as a leader. Because he's calm and he has the ability to react to a play, I think he's very much a calming presence for our offense, and he settles people down, which has been really rewarding to see and watch.
Dave, you can't see the smile on my face right now, but you just made Sam Hartman very relatable to me. 158 pounds in high school, now 215. Sam is like this supermodel, good-looking guy. He's this great football player. He's so many things I'm not, coach. But now we have a significant weight gain in college in common. I feel so much better now.
Well, please don't share how you did it
with him.
I think he has.
No, not with him. No.
Dave Clawson joining us.
The process of how you got there is probably a little bit different.
Okay.
You don't have to shoot me down now, Dave. Come on.
No, Joe, we know. No, we know. It was a little bit different. It was a little bit different. You and I both went to NC State. I know the places you were going to. It's a completely different thing. Dave Clawson joining us. Wake Forest head football coach, undefeated right now in the ACC. They play Syracuse on Saturday. Resiliency is a word that keeps coming up. I know you have used it. Your players have used it. There was a resilient game that you won over the weekend against Louisville. There was like four lead changes or whatever that was on Saturday, and a pretty wild one. But that resiliency, I'm curious about, and what your assessment is on this. Because I asked Dave Doran, the NC State head coach, about this, how last year, playing through a pandemic and having what amounts to super seniors with the rules leads to a carryover effect in that resiliency. Like last year, if you could get through that and everything with it,
you know what, some difficulty in a normal game might not seem so bad. Has there been a carryover effect from last year in this group given the experience?
Absolutely, and we talked about it as a staff before last year started, that we had to make sure that I said this is almost a two-year process because we have no idea what's going to happen this year. Mm-hmm. Are we going to play, not play? Are games going to be canceled? Or are guys going to opt out? I go, but we got to make sure whatever we do in 20 has only going to strengthen us for 21. You know, whether we play 2 games, 4 games, 8 games, whatever, you know, let's do the best we can and make sure we keep the team together. And that was probably the biggest challenge. And after the North Carolina game, you know, we had 7 or 8 players with COVID, but because of the contact tracing, mm-hmm. there was 32, 35 guys that couldn't play. And we had 2 or 3 games canceled in a row. And at that point, I think our team was close to a breaking point. And at that, you know, we had leaders step up, Luke Masterson and Sam Hartman and Michael Juergens and other guys that said, hey, we started this, we're finishing it. And we had a few guys opt out, but the majority of the team kind of made a commitment to each other. And there's no question that that commitment to each other made them closer and has carried over into this year. This is an extremely close football team. There's not cliques. It's been a lot of fun coaching this group, and not just because we're winning. I think all those things lead to winning. And so it's been a fun group, and I think they're very close. And, you know, after going through last year, being down a field goal or a touchdown really isn't a big deal.
Dave Clawson, Wake Forest football coach, joining us here on the Heister Automotive Group Hotline. That's Joe Ovius. I'm Joe Giglio. Speaking of commitment, last year you stayed away from your wife, Catherine, for health reasons. And I'm curious, is she sick of you this year? But at 5-0, I mean, you got to do what works, right?
Yeah. I mean, I was miserable and she was happy last year. So she was.
No, I don't believe that.
I'm much more needy than she is. So she was at the, you know, she was fine. She was with my son. She was teaching online. He was taking online school. And, but yes, you know, thank God for scientists and doctors and modern medicine that they came up with a vaccine that allows us to play football, have fans in the stands, and, you know, to be very honest about it, allows me to spend this season with my wife and family. So it's been much better, and it's been easier to keep a little bit of balance this year, having something to look forward to go home to.
Dave Clawson, Wake Forest football coach, joining us here on the OG. We appreciate the time. We'll check in with you later in the season.
Okay, thanks so much, guys. I appreciate you having me on.
Let's check in with Abby Labar, Bally Sports, with another Carolina Hurricanes preseason game in the books. That's winding down. We're a week from the start of the season. Abby, what's up?
The Halloween songs go perfectly with the 25 pumpkin candles I have lit in my house right now.
Pumpkin scented?
Odd.
Oh, yeah.
Perfect.
It's that time of year. We're a week from opening night. Are you kidding me? We're a week from opening night. And the season even started later this year. I feel like it just kind of snuck up on us.
Yeah, and it's on the first night of the NC State Fair, too, which is even better. I love it. Let's do all the traffic on Thursday
Go
night.
All in.
Let's just
I
do
mean,
it.
All
I think,
in.
Oh, and NC
we
State.
We didn't have it last year, right?
Yeah.
So we got to do it. We got to do it all on opening night.
And NC State's also having their late night practice extravaganza that night too. So let's just do all the things in one night. speaking of all the things, the Carolina Hurricanes. I heard. I know Rod Brindamore has mentioned this in interviews. I know he was on with Adam Gold last week, and he talked about the roster. And the roster seems essentially set. That it's some. There's not a lot of movement possible, but we do this every year with a player. And this year's player is Seth Jarvis, and a guy who, hey, given the rules, might find his way into the roster, maybe based on his play. How is that playing out right now?
It's the whole situation is just interesting, and because of the rules with the CHL, that's where it makes things complicated, right? Like in a normal season, we could be like, oh, do you sign this guy? Do you not? And you can put him on an entry level contract, and if he doesn't play, he just goes down to the AHL. Mm-hmm. And this is really the first season I feel like too. Shane and I were talking about this, where yes, you kind of do have these guys that bobble on the line every year in training camp, but the Canes have utilized those guys before. This is really the first year where you have some veteran guys that the Hurricanes brought in, where you really don't have that roster space right now. And so I think Seth Jarvis, and you could tell in the way Rod Brind'Amour was talking after the game last night, his facial expressions, everyone knows Rod's facial expressions. He can't hide anything. Like, he was impressed, and he's been impressed with Seth Jarvis. And you look at the stat sheet, the kid only had 2 shots on goal, but he was one of the best players out there last night. Just the way he played, I mean, people's jaws were on the ground. And so, you know, there's some different layers and some moving parts. And the good news is he can play 9 games, technically, per the rules, before they have to make some sort of decision, per se. That's how long he can play before he can be sent back to the CHL, or before they decide whether to sign him or not. And Tripp and I talked about this extensively last night, about the what ifs, right? And you can put all these what ifs out there, like, okay, if you sign Seth Jarvis, well, you got to have the cap space. Mm-hmm. So do you put a veteran player on waivers, you know? And then if you do, who is that? Because if Seth Jarvis comes into the lineup, he's not going to be a fourth line guy. He's going to play with the skill guys, mm-hmm. right? Like with Nino and Drury last night, and we saw in the red and white game, he was, you know, playing with Aho, and I think it was Svech in that one. And you're playing with these, you want to put them in a position to succeed. So there's just so many different things to unpack with it. And that's where you kind of have to just trust what Don Waddell is going to do as they continue to watch his development.
Abby Labar, Bally Sports, joining us here on the OG. That's Jovius. I'm Joe Giulio. All right, Abby, there was obviously a lot of hand-wringing and consternation when the Hurricanes signed Tony DeAngelo. I'm curious, how has he kind of integrated himself into the locker room? Is he kind of seamless, or has he tried to be in the background, or has he really just tried to win his teammates over, or did he feel like he had to win his teammates over?
I don't think he did, to be honest. And I think, like, when I say win your teammates over, like, and I talked about this a little bit last week, or I think it was on the roundtable with Adam Gold, like, you can feel, and that was the biggest question this offseason. Even I was, you know, kind of like confused as why would you mess with the culture, or mess with something that was, you know, so strong and intact in there, right? And the Canes, not just with DeAngelo, but they brought in a lot of new guys, and there was a couple guys that they said goodbye to. And for me, I was like, well, what the heck's going to happen in that locker room? Like, you had something that was so good in there, you know, why unglue that? And so just what I've noticed in training camp, these guys are like messing with each other, and you can feel, like, you can just feel that they all get along really well, and that there is that culture there that you were worried might have come apart, you know, having all these different changes in the roster. And like with Tony DeAngelo, it's the same. Like, he, you know, you don't see anybody like not talking to him. You don't see anybody, you know, not messing around with him. Like, it's the same type of dynamic with all of the new players. And I think that's been refreshing. I think it goes back to what the conversations were when the team brought him in, right? Like, they had those conversations with players that played with him, that players that,
yeah,
you know,
from the Rangers. Yeah, sure.
Him.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you have to kind of just trust that and see, you know, see what happens, right? Like, have an open mind about it. And I think it seems like most of everybody in that locker room has bought into that and trusted their teammates who did have relationships with him.
Abby Labar joining us here on the OG alongside Joe Giulio. I'm Joe Ovias, Bally Sports. Carolina Hurricanes start the season this time next week. And Abby is brought to you by John Heister, Chrysler, Dodge, Jeep, Ram in Lillington. So where does DeAngelo get paired, in your opinion? What's the talk?
I don't know, because I really liked Ian Cole and Ethan Bear last night together. I think everybody did. Mm-hmm. I was not expecting that, because I liked how originally I liked Ethan Bear with Jacob Slavin. I don't know. I think we're gonna see those pairings switch. I think we're gonna see Bear and DeAngelo switch spots with Slavin as they kind of match up against some different opponents here. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because you either have DeAngelo and Slavin, or you put Bear and Slavin together, mm-hmm. and you move DeAngelo back down, because you're going to keep Pesci and Shea together.
Of course. Yeah. Right.
For sure. So I don't know. I don't really. I think we have such a small sample size right now. I want to see a little more. What I do like is, and what I do notice about DeAngelo is he skates really hard. Like, he does, the effort is there. With the way that he plays on the ice, and he has that edge and that that grit. And so I do like where what they've done with him on the power play. So yeah, again, I think it's just going to come down to, because Ian Cole kind of has that grit as well. So I don't know if you need that, if you need D'Angelo and Cole together, because they both kind of have that edge and that grit. You got to balance it out in some way. So I don't know. I want to see more, but I liked what I saw last night with D'Angelo and Slavin and Cole and Bear together.
Abby Labar, Bally Sports, joining us here on the OG. All right, Abby, Canes open the season next Thursday. We'll actually be out at PNC Arena. They take on the Islanders. What is this? A regular season game? Not against the Lightning? Or the Thunder? Right? Or the Lightning?
I mean, what, or the Panthers? What were the odds
hey,
that
Central Division champs, okay?
Champions. Oh, we hit on it last night. What okay. were the odds that that Nashville game went into overtime last night? You knew that was going to happen.
Yeah, I know. It's just what people wanted. Preseason but overtime hockey.
I'm not the only one who's going to miss the schedule, right? Nah, from last year.
I don't know if the players are going to miss the schedule.
I think you could play the whole league.
I thought it was fun.
Yeah, I agree.
I think you can play two at a time is what I'm getting at. You could still play Montreal on the other team.
Sure, sure.
But I don't know. I thought it was kind of interesting last year how it set up, and obviously for out of necessity. But I'm looking at this schedule. I'm like, oh, man, this looks like a regular old hockey schedule.
I know. Well, there were certain scenarios last year where it did feel like Groundhog Day a little bit, especially when you did, you played the Lightning like five times. But there was also those games where it was, you could tell, oh, these teams have played each other five or six times. Like there was that nasty
they were sick of each other.
And edge in the games. So, yeah, for sure. But no, I'm excited to see how all of these teams play against each other, like especially in the divisions, like the Metro Division, like we haven't seen some of those teams in a couple years.
Yeah.
So it'll be fun, I think. I'm glad we're opening with the Islanders.
Abby Labar, Bally Sports. All right, next week we're going to work on some Finnish.
I mean, I have my Rosetta Stone ready to go, so just let me know.
All right, I think we're going to ask Alexa.
I say we put out the call right now.
Is there
like a Finnish business in the triangle somewhere?
Some language expert who can teach us Finnish.
I don't want an expert though. I want to know where these guys go hang out. Like I want the Finnish barber to call us.
Well, no, I actually know who cuts their hair.
Well, we do know him.
Yeah, I know who cuts their hair, but that's another story altogether. Shout out to Steven. Anyway,
not your neighborhood, right? Like they have to have connected with somebody in this community now.
I don't know. I honestly do not know. So, the Red Sox eliminated the Yankees. And the game was pretty much over early. When Garrett Cole's getting yanked in the third inning, and that's your ace. That's not a good sign.
It was over in the first inning.
Well, yeah.
Stanton's home run, that wasn't a home run.
That wasn't, right.
And then the Red Sox pop their own two-run shot. And Jackson, my youngest son, was like, hey, you want to watch the game? I'm like, nope, it's over.
No, it's done. It's funny. We got done watching some silliness. So when the game came on, I'm like, all right, let me flip it over to ESPN. And can we not have – is ESPN going to make us listen to the Miley Cyrus Nothing Else Matters cover from Metallica like the entire time? Is that a thing?
God, I hope not.
I mean, I don't mind Miley Cyrus. She's got a hell of a voice.
Did you
but
see
I'm not
her
quite
perform
sure.
it with Metallica on the Howard Stern show?
I saw the clip, yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
No, she knows what she's doing.
Yeah.
This is not an anti-Miley Cyrus thing.
Right.
She's got a hell of a voice. I'm saying
And I know
I'm
there's
not
plenty
quite,
of Metallica fans who are like, no, no, no.
I'm not quite sure I want to hear that coming in and out of every break.
Oh, did they pull a
oh, it was like the whole
Fallout Boy with the college football playoff?
Yes. Light them up. So yeah, the Red Sox went 6-2 in the American League wild card game last night, and when I turned it on, Kelly looks at me, she goes, oh, it must be the postseason. I go, what? I said, because you're actually watching baseball. It's the time of the year in which you actually care. I'm like, well, yes, because that's all Major League Baseball has told me I should care about. I shouldn't necessarily care about the regular season. I mean, we live in a world where the Los Angeles Dodgers won 106 games and they're in a single elimination tonight, which obviously I will watch. Now, it helps that the Giants won 107 games.
Are our Giants, by the way.
Oh, is that our official team?
Sorry, bud.
I thought the Rays were our official team.
Yeah, it's okay.
I think we all have our own rooting interest in this one. Then.
Well, fair enough. Well, from a company point of view, go Rays.
You're saying go Rays. Rand's got the Braves. Mm-hmm. I got the Giants.
Fair enough. So as I'm tuning into the game last night, I couldn't get like, but an overwhelming sense of maybe I'm misinterpreting the Yankees having been eh for a while now, and everybody else is caught up, so to speak. Or maybe it's my consistent thing about the Red Sox, and that you're not the plucky Red Sox anymore. You basically operate the same way the Yankees do. You're the big boys, and you're going to go out and you're going to try to win and everything else. And you've actually been getting the better of the Yankees.
Yes, the
here.
Third time they've met in the playoffs, obviously, since 2004.
Yeah.
And they've won all three of those series.
So
one game this, but still counts as a series.
That element, too. But then you also look at the other teams that are getting it consistently done. Like, nobody's going to want to like the Houston Astros because they cheated. The Dodgers, I'm like, and for me personally, I'm like trained to not like the Dodgers because my dad is
right.
a Cardinals
fan. The Stinger.
Yeah, I almost feel like the Yankees have suddenly become sympathetic in a way.
Well, let's not get too far.
Maybe.
But the Stinger for the Yankees, and all you would have to do is listen to Yankee radio, talk radio today yeah. in New York to just get on the other side of that.
Oh, I did.
Because it was all about Garrett Cole, I'm
yes.
sure,
who eliminated them
like four different times. And now that he's pitching for them, it's like, oh, you're going to go and just crap in your pants in the first inning.
But
how do you, if you're Garrett Cole last yeah. night, how do you not have like a giant tub of spider tack in your pants? Like, who's checking in the Yankees Red Sox game in the playoffs? Like, you could probably get away with it, right?
Here's Garrett Cole after the disappointing outing where he was yanked in the third inning.
At the end of the season, we're all going through and wearing whatever we've had to, you know, overcome to get to this point. You know, the other team's dealing with same kind of situation. So, you know, when it's all said and done, I didn't perform the way I wanted to perform tonight.
Can you describe the disappointment you're feeling not getting the job done?
Sick to my stomach.
Sick to his stomach. But here's the thing. And again, don't pretend like I was watching Yankees baseball all year, but my understanding is that Garrett Cole was their lone ace consistently throughout the regular season.
Well, he struggled, though, with the spider tack transition because
he was one of those guys. He was one of those
guys. Look, the Yankees actually, to your point about are they is there something on the other? Is the shoe on the other foot finally with the Yankees?
I think so.
I think Aaron Judge is the type of player who is very likable. Mm-hmm. I think Giancarlo Stanton, same way. Like, I think they have a pretty – Joey Gallo is another guy, too. Mm-hmm. You look at their lineup, and they kind of play in the modern type of home run or nothing kind of way, but they have, like, these outsized figures.
But they weren't doing it enough because they actually got – they were well behind – teams like the Dodgers, all the other top teams in terms of run score. But
sure,
anyway,
because they started off slow.
Yeah.
When they picked up Gallo, they kind of went on this run. Then they got cold, which is how they ended up in the wild card game, mm-hmm. basically. But they have a likable team, is what I'm getting at. The Red Sox are this, you know, you mentioned the Astros cheated. Well, the Red Sox cheated too.
Yes.
So we've kind of parsed who we want to accuse of cheating and who we want to hold it against. I think at this point, the Astros would actually be the best story, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because this would be the non-asterisk World Series for them.
But people ain't getting over that.
I know they won't, but in theory, right? Like, that would be the actual best story if you want to go with your heel face analogy. Like, they'll never be the heel. I mean, excuse me, they'll never be the face again, the
never.
Astros. But that would be one heck of a heel story.
It's the OG alongside Joe Giglio. I'm Joe Ovias. If you miss anything from today's show, you can check it out on the Best of the OG podcast, Apple, Spotify, Google. I know what I'm asking is kind of amusing, and that I'm sitting here trying to act as though the Yankees are in some way, shape, or form sympathetic for people who are trained to not like the Yankees. I mean, I remember a couple of years ago, I kind of laughed at Adam Gold, who referred to the Yankees, if I remember correctly, as under the radar. I'm like, you're the Yankees. There's no such thing as under the radar. It'd be the same thing as me saying, hey, you know what? Duke is under the radar this season in hoops. Like, what? Like, I made that a bit a couple years ago with the Carolina Tar Heels in basketball, like the slept on Tar Heels and things like that. But, like, you can't really, like, there's no such thing as the Yankees being under the radar. But I can make the point that we're 20 to 30 years past, or really 20 years past the quote-unquote evil empire of the
yeah.
New York Yankees.
Yeah.
And the reason why I say that is because you can't look at the rivals like the Red Sox, who had always – there's the whole hammer-nail thing, right?
Yeah.
How can you be a rivalry when one's the hammer, one's the nail? That was the Yankees and the Red Sox. But since they broke through –
it's been all Red Sox.
It's been all Red Sox. So it's just been interesting to see how the tables have turned in that situation. And maybe it's my own biases against the Red Sox because of all the bandwagony nature of all these Red Sox that came out of the woodwork after they won that World Series. And I'm also like, at least with the Yankees, like they sat through the Steinbrenner mess of the 80s and whatnot, right? Like I get that, you know? Anyway, regardless, the Yankees out. I did listen to a little New York sports talk this morning, and if what's funny is there was some blasting of Gerrit Cole, but really it was about Aaron Boone, the manager, to see whether or not he's a guy that they should actually bring back because of the standard is winning it or failure. But it looks
I thought he did a good job this year. They started slow this year. They, like I said, they made some moves before the deadline that improved the team. They put themselves in a hole, and this is why I like the wild card. You shouldn't be rewarded for being in the wild card.
It's interesting. There's been another the whole is the baseball postseason unfair discourse has returned this week for obvious reasons, and I understand why leaving everything to a one game scenario in a sport that's based on the idea of series is irrational. And like if they were to change the wild card format from one game to a best of five, I would actually be okay with that.
Wasn't it a best of three for a minute?
Before they expanded, it was okay. Like it was a best of. And then I know, like, honestly, if you really wanted to go all in, you should have done what you did last year with the 16-team
format. Yeah, I didn't mind that.
You know, and
it was a lot of baseball.
It was a 60 game regular season because of the pandemic, and you had to expand the field and everything else. But if you want maximum bang for your buck, well, then you probably should just go 16
or
teams.
You can go six in each side with the two byes. I like the two byes because it does reward those teams with the two best records.
But so far, it's been effective since the adoption of the one game wild card playoff in 2012. Just two wild card teams have won the World Series because I know you've pointed this out. Wild card teams before 2012.
Yeah.
We're winning 7 years
in a row. Or we're in the World Series.
So it has had the desired effect. The wild card one-off will create a little bit more chaos, and it won't be such a given for a wild card team to get hot and keep it going.
Yeah. It's time for Rant 2.
Acapella the news.
Well, boys, there was a baseball game last night. It may have been over after the second inning, but the Red Sox took out the mighty Yankees in their $200 million payroll. So, from Boston fans, this is a song to the Yankees. Yankees! Bye, bye, bye! You just picture like Fenway Park jamming out to this right now.
Oh, oh, oh.
Not bad.
You're leaving here tonight. You thought that you would be alright. Hope you enjoy your flight. Cause we're moving on. Heading to Tampa Bay. Not sure what else to say. Glad it wasn't Garrett's day. And those deep flies weren't gone. I know that your payroll's a lot. It ain't no lie. You're not as ready as you thought. Yankees, bye, bye, bye. Don't really want to rub it in. Actually, we do, because it makes us grin. Might need a new manager to apply. Yankees, bye, bye, bye. Not really sure how far we'll go. Keeping you at home is all worth it, though. You've got time, find someone else to buy. Yankees, bye, bye, bye.
Pretty good, Ran.
Thanks. Anytime we can do NSYNC, we're doing it.
Oh, yeah. No, anytime. NSYNC over Backstreet Boys, too, by the way.
Okay.
I'm just saying.
I know you're saying.
Who had more bops?
It depends on what your definition of a bop is.
NSYNC
had
the
literally,
bop.
They had Dirty Bop, so. Dirty Pop.
Yeah. It was really close.
Did sound like bop.
You've been listening to the Best of the OG with Ovius and Giglio podcast, part of the Capital Broadcasting Podcast Network. Brought to you by Capital Financial Advisory Group. Get your total retirement income plan by texting JOE to 21000. Don't forget, this podcast drops every weekday at 6 p.m., and you can find it at WRALSportsFan.com, the WRAL Sports Fan app, or you can subscribe for free at the iTunes and Google Play stores.